I mean, at the end of the day, doesn't it also come down to the fact that the board did this to themselves by putting too much power in an executive director or an employee that really wasn't even a property manager and who may have had other things going on that was, and this was not a priority of hers? I mean, BRMA, isn't that the problem, that at the end of the day, when something like this happens so abruptly, it was, seems to me like the board allowed this to happen.
Broadcasting now, a special episode of Straight Fire VR. The vacation rental world is reeling after the news of VRMA's leadership change. Our guests discuss the shocking departure of Kimberly Miles. Commenting on the breaking news is the current director of government affairs and advocacy at Inhabit IQ and former CEO of Seaside Vacations, Scott Leggett. Also commenting on the leadership chain is hospitality product, marketing, and executive at V-Trips, as well as part-time professor at Brown University, Amber Carpenter. Our host, Steve Milo, has opinions on the matter. Steve, when you're ready, proceed.
Hey, thank you, Heather. Appreciate it. Welcome to another episode of Straight Fire VR. And I wanted to start with Amber Carpenter, who was in New Orleans at the VRMA. A show that had not as much attendance as some had hoped, but I wanted to get your reaction to the conference. And was there anything that you learned that was interesting, or anything that you thought was interesting in terms of overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think the attendance was very vendor heavy, is the way that I would put it. And I think these spring ones have been that way for a few years. I did hear some commentary that it was better than last year. But it was very light on the attendee side. And I think that's why the education tracks were somewhat minimal, because there wasn't a lot of attendees. So it did feel a little bit, it felt a little bit light, is the way that I would put it. I did think that Key Data did a great job in the opening session, talking about kind of how the year is going, and giving us some really good key insights and validating what we've been talking about, that Vrbo has been down considerably year over year for 2 years in a row now, and is declining. So I think that there was a lot of validation in that. You know, I kind of, one of my biggest takeaways is just the sheer number of vendors is, you know, it's not a bad thing by any means, but there are just a lot of niche vendors, niche players right now. And so, you know, even for me being in the industry as long as I have been, it's a bit overwhelming. I thought it was great to see Capital One there making an appearance before they've really kind of launched, but I think also there was a little bit of an emphasis on AI-driven topics and tools. And I think there's a lot of noise when it comes to that, personally.
All right, Scott. I did not prep Amber for any of this, and she started right off with VRMA. So it's kind of like the elephant in the room. So I talked to so many vendors who were upset. They were told that attendance would be much better after Kansas City. They feel like they got snookered doing this spring. Quite a few larger ones said they would not be coming back to a spring forum. Other critiques of VRMA were because they went to Europe, which was terrible in attendance. I heard there were 50 property managers there. They neglected promoting and creating an education announcement for spring forum until the middle of March. I know that for sure because I looked at their website. And they said VRMA lost focus. And what Amber said is that she thought attendance was better in New Orleans. I actually have some data. Now, this was from 4-1, so potentially it improved. But Kansas City, as of 4-1, April 1st, was 569 overall attendance 2 weeks prior to the conference. And New Orleans was only 476. Attendance looked like it was down by 100. And I think one of the big reasons was probably that the distraction of VRMA Europe caused them to lose focus on VMware Spring. But I mean, vendors were upset. I mean, I talked to a number, and I guess because I was on the VMware board, they talked to me and they were really upset. So Scott, take it any direction you want, because I know you were on VMware board as well.
Sure. So I think there's a lot of lessons learned here, and I'm coming away with some optimism because the elephant in the room really is there's significant changes at the top at VRMA, and so I think they acknowledge all the issues that Amber just delineated and are and quite honestly. It's just not. There's a lot of reasons why I think the attendance was low. One of them you've alluded to was the promotional aspect about it, and you know, one observation that I have is that there's so much competition out there. You know, the VRMA used to be the only game in town. Now you just you can't even sort through all the references you get an invite to, or people are soliciting for you. So people really have to choose, and that really requires you to up your game and make your value proposition better. And if there's a criticism, first on the promotional side, I think that you know VRMA often recycles the same kind of promotions that they did for the previous event, change the name and the date and the place, but it's all this lookalike. So people's eyes glaze over after a while. Amber, to your comment that you felt the content was a little light, I'll give them a little bit of a pass on that because I think that was deliberate to get more people into the showcase because the vendors were disappointed in Kansas City, and there were several kind of structural things there. They separated the suppliers and the attendees for lunch, and you know, your badge was coded, and if you were a supplier, you ate lunch at this time, and if you were VRM, you ate lunch at another time. That's when a lot of business gets done over those meals, and so they made some adjustments there, and I think they listened and tried to get more people, allow more time in the showcase. So I think we need to give them a little bit of a pass there. The good news coming out of this, and Steve, you alluded to this, is I really think the board is acknowledging this, and that's why we're seeing some of the changes that were announced today. So I'm looking at it from an optimistic perspective. It may be late for many people and feel like it's too long for those adjustments to come. But I'm looking at it from an optimistic perspective that I think that they are going to make the changes and adjustments, and if they and they have to remain viable. There's just too much competition out there.
Yeah, so Amber, unfortunately, that announcement went into my spam folder, which may be part of the problem. But the president and CEO, interesting why she was president and CEO, because I thought she was executive director. Kimberly Miles has resigned from the VRMA organization. So it sounds like they're looking now for a new executive director. I am not sure why they would have made her president, but that's a side issue. You know, when I travel very large vendors, like vendors that money's not necessarily an object, even though some things are tight for vendors, they were so unhappy about what happened at VRMA Europe. Not only was the attendance bad, but they felt that the way VRMA had gone to Europe, the content, the communication had caused a lot of division within different associations within Europe. And I just don't even understand why they went back to VRMA Europe. It made no financial sense. I was on the VRMA board for 4 years. I was treasurer. I was on the finance committee for probably almost 8 years. I did everything killed the ERMA Europe until it was finally dead, and then they brought it back. The first thing I told Kimberly Miles is, why? Why are you doing the ERMA Europe? And she said, well, the membership wants it. I said, what? How many members do you have outside of the U.S.? And she didn't give me an answer. And I said, what makes you think that Europe is a good place for VRMA? And she said, well, this was the direction I was given. And, you know, I think Scott and some other board members had been instrumental in doing instead an alliance with a short-term stay summit, which I went to last year. It was heavily attended. It was a great situation. And it gave the ability for VRMA to have exposure to talk about advocacy and other things without taking on financial burden, which VRMA Europe, I've heard, lost six figures, which they barely can afford. And this is on top of a Houston Expo, where literally they had four people registered, property managers. They were going to be embarrassed by the vendors, and they had to give away free admission just to get some property managers in. I don't understand, Amber, how any of this could happen. I mean, I talked to Kimberly back a year ago about the executive summit not having an executive track, and I volunteered to help, and I got a lot of executives to that executive summit. I also helped with VRMA International, getting people from Europe, obviously investment bankers. You were on one panel with Skift and a lot of other ones, and I created an executive track. She never reached out to me after that to say, hey, can you help again? It's incredible that the core issue which drives the money and the membership within the VRMA is education. And yet it seems like VRMA has been asleep. And Scott is right. There's a lot of competition now. There's Skift. There's Focusrite. Amy Hynote's going to do another DARM. And then all the vendors have conferences throughout the year, Inhabit IQ, TNS, Escapia, HomeAway. So, Amber, how could this happen?
You know, Steve, thank you for lobbing that one over to me.
Thank you for me, too.
As been pointed out in a couple episodes, I've been around for a while, you know, 23, 24 years in. I've seen the ebb and flow of VRMA for whatever reason. And a lot of it is, you know, the leadership of it kind of getting lost in their purpose. And we as an organization and as an industry have always like risen up to help right that ship. And it feels like we're just in that place again a little bit, where we need to help them understand what it is that we need from them, because they're off base. And I don't personally know the individual that just resigned, but my guess, Steve, is that there is sometimes, you know, I think partnering with the Short Stay Summit was probably brilliant, right? But I think sometimes in the moment, especially, you know, people get lost in, well, I want it to be our own brand. I want it to be that we're the leader in this, you know, et cetera. And I'm not saying that that's what diverted them, but that tends to be some of what happens. I think also timing has been awkward. So like as people were leaving New Orleans, there was the Pacific Northwest show coming up, and the flights from the West were very, very expensive to get out to New Orleans. So I think people, our budgets are all slim, right? And so we're having to make decisions that are affected by some of those dynamics. And it feels like the timing of things, no one was looking at how these events are overlaying each other from a relevancy. But I feel like at the same time, if the costs are going to be so high, it's going to have to be relevant this year. And that happens every time our budgets start to squeeze a little bit. You know, you're going to see attendance at everything. People will be choosier. You can't make it out to everything. Even Steve, look at us. Like, we usually travel with a much larger group, and this is the second year in a row that we've been much more particular about who can attend the shows. It feels like it's off track. And I've seen where the season right after it has been this off track is one of the best seasons of VRMA. And Scott, to your point, like, I think we're, you know, everybody's trying to please everyone. And I think that at the end of the day, we as an industry need to tell VRMA what we need from an education standpoint, or else, you know, the a lot of the people that submit proposals are selling something, right? So a lot of the sessions feel geared toward topics around what tools have just come out, even if they're, you know, glossed over a little bit. But, you know, so I think that that feedback loop is a little bit light, right? Like, I don't even know how to tell, if I don't want to present, I don't even know how to tell Verma right now. And that's probably my fault. I'm super busy killing it for you, Steve, right? I'm just saying, like, I don't know how to tell VRMA right now what's important to me as a property manager if I'm not presenting, if I'm not trying to submit a proposal.
All right, Amber, there's a lot to unpack there. So there used to be something called a call for presentation, and that wasn't done for the spring forum. The call for presentations for education topics actually made it a much more equal situation. And you're right, this sounds very familiar to something that Scott Leggett may remember, which was VRMA, Save VRMA. There was an effort, there was an association director, it was actually a husband and wife, the Sarkas, and Save VRMA thought the Sarkas were taking the organization in the wrong direction. And so Save VRMA, Alex Risser, Steve Trover, a couple others, basically ran on a platform of change, and they came in and changed a lot, including the executive director. And Scott, I guess you're optimistic now. I've just listed all the things that went wrong that were terrible. Good news is you have VRMA International to, you know, hopefully they can ramp up, get the education promoted a couple months in advance, the keynote speakers a couple months in advance. That's the one that makes all the money. Assuming we actually know who's running VRMA, which I didn't really see who was going to take over. But I mean, at the end of the day, doesn't it also come down to the fact that the board did this to themselves by putting too much power in an executive director or an employee that really wasn't even a property manager and who may have had other things going on that was, and this was not a priority of hers? I mean, VRMA, isn't that the problem, that at the end of the day, when something like this happens so abruptly, it was clearly, seems to me like the board allowed this to happen.
Yeah, Steve, and you know, I think we have to go back a few years, and I was on some of those boards, and so there's been the I'd say there's been a subtle shift over time, and some of that comes from having a professional management association run your organization, and you know, they, while they say that, you know, the organization's often in control or is in control, and they have a bias that comes into play whether they acknowledge it or not. And I think some of the shift that we've seen has to do where it's been more revenue focused than it has been value proposition focused. In other words, our revenues have increased while our services may have declined. But the reason I'm optimistic about it, and you referenced the Save VRMA days, and that was a big, big thing, probably the most controversial era of VRMA's history. And we didn't have to go there. And that's why I'm taking some optimism. I think there were board members that were able to look ahead and say, okay, we need a course correction. And the easy thing would have been to try to figure that all out and then make a change. But it appears to me that they were willing to take that gamble and say, let's make the change now. And just, you know, from some inside conversations, I know that they're planning to convene industry leaders outside of the board to help VRMA reposition itself, reconsider its identity and place in the industry. My hope is honestly that they will reestablish themselves as the the authority, the premier, and the best value for its members, because you do have other conferences. IMN, I've got two pop-ups for them while we've been talking for their next event in Miami. They started out with one a year. Now they're probably at three a year, and they're a pay-to-play group. They're professional conference organizers. They are excellent at organizing a conference, but they have no intrinsic knowledge of our space whatsoever, or probably not for many of the other conferences. My feeling is if they could get enough dog catchers to go to a conference, they do a dog catcher conference, whatever makes money. And so, a trade group like ours really needs to come at it from a different angle. Yes, we need to be solvent, but we need to look at what we're bringing in terms of benefits to our members: education, networking opportunities, an affiliation that protects their business from regulation, and just the educational component. And again, my optimism comes because I'm anticipating a reset, a real soul searching over the next couple of months that will realign Verma to its original mission.
All right. Well, Scott, well said. And I'm going to give you a chance in a second, Amber, but I doubt they're going to be talking to me directly because I have a lot to say to VRMA, but it sounds like a lot of
people. Well, Steve, I'm going to say this publicly. They need to be talking to you because you just can't talk at the with the people who want to placate you or who are looking to be pulled into the inside group. You really have to look at those that are disaffected. And that includes, as you alluded to, some of the vendors. The ones, Amber, that I really felt sorry for on the showcase were not the big institutional groups like the one I work for, Inhabit. I think we had enough traffic to, we probably got, at least break even from it. But I saw, as you mentioned, a lot of new vendors there, a lot of people just entering the space. And I think they looked at that show with a lot of optimism and thought, aha, here's our moment to get out there in front of people. And I think those were probably the ones that were more disappointed.
Well, so I did notice a lot of people at the conference listen to the podcast. Some of it sounds like hate listening, but I got a lot of people who talked. So let me give VRMA some advice. One, because we're still members, you need to be a lot more transparent. I mean, I can't even find information on the VRMA website about the committee and who's on the committees. There used to be a finance committee. There used to be a membership committee. There supposedly is an education committee. None of that stuff's there. Two, financial information does not appear to be available to members. I'd like to know what the reserve is. I'd like to be able to see the year-end information reports, how much they're paying the management fee, how much the T&E, travel and entertainment budget has gone to pay for board members. They've bloated up the board. There's 13 people on the board. And my understanding is, there's pretty significant amount of expenses that goes back to these board members and reimbursement, which I'd like to know how much that is. The call for education presentations. I mean, it's ridiculous that they stopped doing that. That just smells of conflict of interest when instead of doing a call for presentation, you do something where education members, in many cases who are suppliers, create their own content that allows them to steer towards certain members and away from others. I know that some of the people who spend the most money on sponsorships were furious at VRMA about that. The fourth is membership value. Other than the conferences, I'm not sure what value there is. There used to be webinars. It's not difficult to create webinars. There used to be podcasts. I mean, there is just such there's a lack of content for members, and for given all they're paying Smith Buckland, it's inexcusable that there's not more membership benefits. Why should people even pay to be a member when I looked at the break even, it almost was cheaper for us to be a non-member and just pay more to attend the conferences because we have less people going. The other thing I'll say on education is, which is just a no-brainer, you need to change the format. I mean, I've been to SCIFT, I've been to IMN, I've been to a lot of conferences. They don't do 45-minute to one-hour presentations. They have 25 minutes, and you can get a lot more content in place if you do it in a 25-minute. Why are they not doing it? Because they're lazy. The VRMA staff has been inherently lazy to change format. And that goes to speakers. You don't need to have a speaker present for an hour. You can have multiple speakers present. People want lots of content. They don't just want this formulaic content that's in place right now with the same tired format. I mean, there's just so much. There's 13 people on the board. I heard two are leaving or were tossed off the board because they changed companies. But I mean, this is a not just we had a bad executive director or whatever they're calling her now. It says president and chairman on their website, which clearly isn't updated because Alex Husner still says Casago. But this is a board failure. This is a failure of the VRMA board, which was elected by the membership. They have a fiduciary responsibility to the membership. My understanding in talking to some people is that they're not even aware of invoices that are being paid by Smith Buckland. Like, they're not even getting the transparency of invoices and payments that are going back and forth between Smith Buckland. That is just non-secular. I was on a condo association board for 5 years as treasurer. I mean, if we ran a condo association board with this lack of transparency and check and balance, we could potentially face criminal charges. I mean, this is ridiculous. And the fact that they haven't done an RFP, request for proposal, to take a look at Smith Buckland and at least take a look at other companies out there, AMCs, association management companies, for 10 years is, an abject failure by the board of directors. It shows the board of directors is lazy. And other thing I will say about the board of directors, there's some on the board who seem to think that their mission for this association is to pursue things like DEI and environmental issues, and that's their primary goal. And that's not. You're here to look out for the entire education of membership, not just a piece, not just a sliver, not just the flavor of the year. You're supposed to be helping to educate people and to provide better content. The fact that you allowed this to happen is on you. And by the way, if you can't handle this, you should resign and let capable people come on the board who are business oriented and who are going to run this like a business and take care of the membership and hold the association management company responsible, because you pay a lot of money to that association management. You clearly aren't getting the benefit of that. That's on you. Sorry, Amber, I went on a ramp. I know you had a lot to think about.
Nope. I think you kind of covered it all. I don't want it to sound like it's just a bashing session, in the sense that, like I said, I've seen us turn this around, and it's going to take a lot more than the people on this podcast to rise up and say, together, we need this. We need more out of this. This is off track. I do think that part of it, and I'm just, this is not personal to anybody, but it was the point. I think, Scott, you, both of you alluded to this, but when you look at the directors on the board, there's 5 VRM seats. 4 of the VRM seats are by people that are actually vendors as well. And so that whole directors section is very vendor heavy. There's just not enough of a cross section of vacation rental managers, in my opinion, that are really leading this organization that aren't as influenced by being also a vendor.
There's 3 vendors on the board. Scott was one.
The directors. Nope. Well, if you look at the directors.
There's 13 directors on the board of directors. There's 11 now because Dirk and Alex have gone off because they changed companies. 3 of the 11 directors that are left are suppliers / vendors. The other 8 are property managers. I think the bigger issue is some of those property managers are not aware of the fiduciary responsibility they have to the membership, because there's no way this should have happened. No neglect should have happened in particular, I'm talking about the officers that were elected by the board to be president and president-elect, and to allow Kimberly Miles to be, and it's still on the website, the president and CEO of VRMA. That is just reckless. I don't know what got into them to do this. It just sounds like they put the fox and they said, here's the hen house. You can go into it now. I mean, this is ridiculous. Why you would have an executive director be the president and CEO of VRMA makes no sense. But anyway, Amber, there was another.
Their website is clearly not up to date then, because if you go count them, it's very supplier heavy.
Amber, there was another.
Amber, let me comment on that a bit, because I think that could be a misread. It isn't skewed that way. In fact, a lot of the suppliers feel like they are the main source of funding for VRMA, and in many ways, the financial viability rides on their backs, and their membership costs a lot more. Their participation at conferences costs a lot more. They have three seats. You are correct. There are a couple of seats that really are pretty ambiguous in terms of whether that individual is a vendor or a property manager. And that really should be clarified. I think, quite honestly, and to help understand how it got there, I think it's a cultural thing. First, a lot of people want to be on that board because of the prestige they feel that's associated with it. And they get there and, you know, they don't know how it functions, how it operates. There used to be significant orientation that every board member went through, and every board member was assigned a mentor to work with that first year, who would guide them through and kind of give them the backstory on issues. And that's that, for some reason, just kind of disappeared. I think the other thing has to really do with the deference that we give to the management company. And it's a valid question, is who's running who, you know, and the deference there, the management company is revenue focused. We should be revenue solvent, but our mission should be services and value that we bring to the membership, education, again, advocacy, those kind of issues. And I look at some of the events that we have, and they should be more affordable, you know. And I think, again, I am finding optimism in this, because it didn't take a revolution. The board, I'm certain that there wasn't unanimous consensus there, but there at least we should take some optimistic view that at least a majority recognized that a reset is necessary. And I honestly feel like this action of changing the executive director is just the first step in a reset that that this organization is determined to get back on track. And maybe that's because I know some of those people and I know where their hearts are. I feel that there's been some new faces on the board. Rolf Blizzard in particular is one of the brightest people I know, determined, not going to, you know, let the wall be pulled for his eyes or anything, or prepared to take the bull by the horns. The other thing that Amber, again, on the supplier property manager dynamic, there are guardrails. No supplier can be on the executive committee, or actually they could be treasurer or secretary, but there hasn't been one for a very long time. And they actually feel underrepresented in that regard, because oftentimes, like many organizations, for efficiency, they have an executive committee who essentially talks through all the issues and then brings a proposal to the board for ratification. And there isn't that opportunity for everybody to weigh in a detailed kind of way. And the suppliers feel underrepresented in that regard, because there hasn't been a supplier on the executive committee for a very long time. And I guess I come to it with a bias, because I used to be a member of that board as a property manager now, and I was a member for several years as a supplier rep. So I have seen both sides of the equation.
All right. Well, we could talk about VRMA all day. And the last vendor that I remember on the executive committee was Kyle Buhner, one of Amber's favorite. But Amber, we must go to another subject. I'm sure you'll love this. There was another bad four-letter word that I heard over and over again at the VRMA conference, and that was VRBO. And the problem with VRBO was they were in denial. They kept running around. They kept saying things are going to get better. The excuses last year was it was integration. Then there was the excuse this year that they were starting to spend money. But we just weren't seeing the effect of the money yet. And then Jason Sprinkle just laid them bare. He brought data, because one of the things VRMA was telling individual property managers is, well, that's just your subset of information. You're not representative. Other companies are doing really well on VRBO. Well, Jason Sprinkle of Key Data showed that VRMA was absolutely in a free fall. So Amber, we had a couple conversations with our friends from Expedia Group / VRBO. Do you think they are starting to realize that these issues are not going to go away, that these issues are in part because of technical problems, ways that they work with property managers, and also just things that they used to be much more on top of that they've kind of let go?
So, whether it's in denial or just trying to spin it positively, I will say this, that I don't think that in more one-to-one discussions, they were negating the fact that things have changed and we need to get back on track. And there's certain things both sides need to do to get there. I do feel like the people that we're talking to care. I think that they don't have complete control over it. And I think that, things didn't rebound in the way that they had planned or they thought. And so it's going to take more work for them to get there. I think there's still value, and I think that they're not irrelevant in any way, shape, or form. I don't like some of the changes that are occurring, but I feel like in the same way that Airbnb used to be incredibly difficult, and I'm not saying that they've become sunshine and flowers either, Airbnb has transformed themselves quite a bit, and it doesn't feel as a supplier conflicting with supplier needs. And so, I think that with everybody is going through a metamorphosis and trying to find themselves in their place in the market, and it's gotten a lot more crowded. I mean, Booking.com wasn't a relevant player in the US market, and it's growing, quite consistently, at least from the data that we've been looking at. So they have a lot more competition, as they went dark. When they came back alive, they woke up to a lot more competition than I think they anticipated.
So Scott, people may not realize, because you're associated today with Inhabit IQ, but you used to be run a large property management company. And so you were very familiar with HomeAway and VRBO. So I want to provide some data to you, and you're good with numbers. So let me start off with, in 2022, VTrips in March, 84% of our OTA volume came from VRBO. Now that is probably sounds like normal numbers for most property managers in the space. By March 2024, it was down to 43%. Airbnb, Yeah, wow. That's what I'm saying. Airbnb, March 2022, 8%. March 2024, 32%. And Booking.com was at 3% in March 2022. They were 11% in March 2024. Vrbo has lost half of their OTA market share. And in response, without any notice, they cut subscription from $5.99 to $6.99. They then told vTrips that they were eliminating subscription, and the only response you have is pay per booking. That should be summer. They're going to become merchant of record, which, as you know, for North Carolina, that's a real mess. They said initially summer, which means they would keep all the cash and not allocate it, which would be a real problem for North Carolina, given how you disperse revenue in January and then again, in a summer. And Amber's favorite part is that they're coming up with additional rules, which leads me to believe that will be very, very anti property manager in terms of the fact that there is no transparency and apparently no way to even know why you might have a listing suspended. So, Scott, I'm gonna give this over to you to talk about Vrbo HomeAway, because to me, a lot of this sounds more like Airbnb than it does Vrbo.
Yeah, so my take on it is this: is that Vrbo was the choice of professional managers, and held that ground for a good while. And they did things that were somewhat friendly. I'm not a big OTA fan. I'm fortunate that when I did run those companies you alluded to, the Outer Banks is probably the highest concentration of direct bookings in the industry anyway. And so we haven't really traditionally used OTAs, but that's transitioned a bit. So I think they took a look at the situation and said, well, our investors are grumbling, they need a better return. And so let's emulate Airbnb and we become merchant of record. That has cascading effects. You mentioned the legal effects in North Carolina in particular, but it also, whenever I have the opportunity to talk to people about how property managers make money, it's really the ancillary revenue streams that we're dependent upon. I told people we wouldn't open our doors if we just had to live on commission revenue alone. And we are becoming merchant of record is the first step. They're going to be selling the travel insurance directly. You're going to lose your share of that, security deposit waivers, several of those ancillary revenue streams that property managers really find their profitability in. And so I think their solution to answer to their shareholders was to implement these things. My personal feeling, it's going to backfire on them, and we're going to see those numbers that have been declining continue to do so.
All right. Well, Amber, one company we visited that was all smiles, interestingly enough, was Airbnb. They even said they were listening to our podcast, which I thought was shocking. I said, "Well, I never heard you say that you listened to it." And they said, "Well, we like what we're hearing now." What did you think about our meeting with Airbnb?
I thought it was great. I honestly did. I think that it feels very different. This is what I'm saying is I've seen vendors just like VRMA go through, their own transitions. It was and they, they're going to continue to push to be a trusted site for consumers to use. They are getting more supplier friendly. They're listening to our feedback and how we can work better together. It felt more like a partnership meeting than the very adversarial meetings that have occurred in the past. It was a fantastic meeting. I think David did an incredible job really steering that just really helping that change to something more positive.
Okay, she's talking to David Levine over at Airbnb. I agree. He's done a great job with our account management. We're lucky to have him. So, one of the things that I think was also interesting, and this is Oliver over at Avalara, is that Airbnb is working towards a solution where we'll know exactly which properties they're providing tax revenue to, dispersing tax, and which ones we aren't. Because in the past, we've had to double pay on tax, and it sounds like a solution is coming soon. So, Amber, you had to be pretty pleased to hear that they were working towards a solution on that.
Yeah, and I think that we have more clarity, and I think we have a plan moving forward on how to clean this up a bit. Like I said, some of these things that have been just not even ankle biters, just agonizing to work with them for several years, feel like we've turned a complete corner. Whether it's just even just being more strategic and helping us with how we push different, inventory segments and being more transparent about what really, helps drive revenue on their platform, I think it's been a complete turnaround. There's still always work to go, but it's much better.
So, Scott, some other information, and you'll like this because you're from North Carolina, used to be in North Carolina, in charge of a huge property management company there. So, Guesty raised $130 million. Guesty is a huge property management system out of Tel Aviv. And of course, they met, and they've always tried to talk to VTrips. They're very gracious and, take us out to dinner and places like that. But we let them know that we had made a commitment to TNS for 5 more years, and they wanted to know why. And my explanation is, well, we're in a lot of trust accounting states, including North Carolina. We have close to 500 properties in North Carolina, Carolina Retreats, my Carrington's old company, and that we also are publicly audited by PwC. And so we have a rigorous trust accounting requirement. And I think some of the people at Guesty seemingly think that their trust accounting is easy and relatively straightforward. And we've learned the hard way that trust accounting is not, that it's not just having trust accounting, it's also having enterprise customers create a lot of feedback on trust accounting because it takes, according to Tom Leddy, it takes 5 to 10 years to get trust accounting right. And obviously, InhabitIQ and Streamline have invested a huge amount of money in trust accounting. Can you talk about how difficult or important trust accounting is to property managers in the US? Because, I mean, it's a huge issue for enterprise customers.
Sure. I can tell you that I used to rail against the North Carolina Vacation Rental Act. I just thought it was a big intrusion on our businesses, and that I've shifted that completely to believe that that's what's kept North Carolina clean. It's a trust accounting state, and and I see the rest of the country actually moving that to it protects both the consumer and more importantly, the property owners in terms of distribution and disbursement. We don't see some of the issues we see in some other states where, so basically North Carolina sees a vacation rental as a real estate transaction, not a consumer transaction. And that's probably, aside from trust accounting, the biggest paradigm that differs from a lot of other states. So we have to comply with everything that someone who is renting a home long term would, or selling a piece of property. You have to have a broker's license in the state of North Carolina to be a property manager. And we just don't have the issues, and there's a lot more transparency in terms of disbursement. And we all have horror stories of things that have happened in other places because you don't have those trust accounting requirements. So, but it is difficult, and I will tell you, while Streamline has got it dialed in now, it took them a long time to do that. They entered the that area before they were associated with Enhabit, and there were some prominent companies in the Outer Banks that signed up and then left very quickly because of the difficulties that you've alluded to. It's not a simple task. I'll be honest with you. I love the people at Guesty. They're great people, and I think they really are sincere and trying to do the best and put a good product out there. And their customer relations are stellar. But until they have that trust accounting nailed down, I don't think that they're going to be able to make a foray that they would love to do. And I'm sure they realize that too and are working on that.
All right. Well, I'm sure they have the money to get it right. It just takes time. And it's not just money, right? It's also feedback. You have to constantly get feedback from your users because your users have to tell you when things break. And that's the cycle that took so long with Xscapia. It took so long with V12. It took so long with Streamline. As you say, there was a lot of painful learning. And it also took a long time with TNS. I mean, trust accounting is very, very difficult. But Amber, there was some other technology we looked at, and one of the things that you were excited about was some of the developments at Wheelhouse. So what made you so interested in what Andrew Kitchell and our friend Ben Coleman were showing us at Wheelhouse, even though the internet wasn't working so well?
Some of the new technology that he's come out with around comp sets and how that's going to be part of the weighting algorithm, and we have so much flexibility as to how much it's weighted. He's really innovating at a pace that it feels more aligned with where we're headed. And also as a partner, he's really open to how we can integrate our data more to make those algorithms even stronger. And so he's really focusing a lot of his innovation on how to help scale and make those algorithms more relevant, especially with the fact that every year has felt like a brand new year that doesn't look a lot like the year before or even 2 years before. COVID really messed up a lot of how we look at pricing strategies and, what data does the algorithm use when demand is completely different. History isn't as relevant, right? So getting it, pushing it more and more towards that more real-time relevant, relevancy just seems like a breath of fresh air. And he's just such a great partner and so humble when you talk to him that he wants to learn. He asks great questions. He does a lot more listening than he does talking, and it feels really fantastic to be working with him so closely.
Wow, we may have to end on that note that Amber made a number of compliments to Wheelhouse and Andrew Kitchell and his team. But I know it sounds like there's still more VRMA content we could talk about, but this is the end of the episode. Maybe we'll have a special VRMA episode in the future. We have one for Vacasa that's coming out right after their earnings call. So that'll be something fun to look forward to. Anyway, thank you, Scott. Thank you, Amber, for another great episode of Straight Fire VR. You can go to our website, straightfirevr.com. Thank you again.